The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
You know, I really wish that my little nimble fingers could play the guitar like Phil Keaggy. I mean, wouldn't that be something? Gee, mini Christmas.
He's remarkable. He is remarkable.
Welcome, friends, to another episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart with myself, the Monty Man, and, of course, Chris S. And as we launch forth into this thing, one of my favorite subjects, money. The reason I love it so much is that I'm not a prisoner to it because I don't have any. And you know what? That is just fine with me. Oh, yeah. There's some freedom in that. You know what I mean?
I do.
You know, I got friends that are in the stock market and the people, you know, that have investments and they're not doing so good. And I'm like, gosh, I don't have any of those worries.
So personally, what it's been like for me is I've always had enough to take care of the business that is essential to take care of.
There you go.
You know, so it hasn't necessarily been, you know, an obsession for me. Now I work with a lot of people who have a lot of money.
Right.
And I can tell you that it doesn't necessarily equate to happiness or quality of life.
No.
It just doesn't.
I heard somebody say in a meeting years ago, they said, I have absolutely everything that I need for the moment. And I thought, wow, it's just so simple, but man, is it true.
Absolutely. All right, Monty, so respecting money, you know, just in the beginning, there's been a multiple articles that we've gone over. This is probably the fifth one on money. And I really, you know, I've got a theory about that. Now Bill understood that we needed to remain humble, we needed to remain self-supporting, and that money could be dangerous, like especially in the hands of a group. A group with like 10 grand is a dangerous group, you know. He understood all that, but on the flip side of that, he wanted this Alcoholics Anonymous to be big. He wanted it to do publishing and translation and conventions and outreach efforts and all of that stuff. So there had to be a large amount of money. So how do you balance that? How do you communicate that in a way that is about, you know, staying poor? You know, he didn't really want Alcoholics Anonymous to stay poor. We've talked about this. Their prudent reserve is somewhere up around $20 million a year, their prudent reserve. So there's got to be some money. There's got to be some money around Alcoholics Anonymous for it to have hire and do all the different jobs that they've decided they need to do. So, you know, that being said, let's see what he says in 1957. This is November 1957. Let's see what he says about respecting money. Here in the States, it is Thanksgiving time. The whole of AA takes its cue from this occasion, and we rejoice worldwide in gratitude for the blessings that our fellowship has bestowed upon us. It is traditional, too, that this is the season for taking stock of our progress as a fellowship. We look at our society and ask, how are we doing? AA's 12 traditions are the measuring rods that we use. How well are we sticking to the 12 traditions? Is the prime question of each Thanksgiving week. Every year, we see more clearly that adherence to our hard-won traditional principles is the basis for our unity and the effective carrying of our message. That indifference, lack of understanding, or rebellion against these principles could result in widespread dissension and maybe ruin. We keenly realize that the practice of the 12 traditions is quite as vital to the life of AA as a whole as is the practice of the 12 steps to the life and sobriety of each member. You know, that paragraph there is probably where people, you know, people say all the time, you know, the steps are about personal recovery and the traditions are, mm-hmm. are you know, the steps save the life of the individual and the traditions save the life of the fellowship. About this, our traditions make two short and simple declarations. In Tradition 7, we read, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. We knew that AA would have to come up with a sound and workable money policy or else face endless ineffectiveness and possible collapse. If ever a matter was taken seriously, it was the question of money. You know, we've also talked about this, Monty. Bill Wilson got really, really serious accusations leveled at him early on about how he was putting together a racket. So whenever, you know, whenever donations were requested or it was suggested mm-hmm. that a certain amount of money go to New York, you know, people would get up in arms about Bill Wilson and his racket. and I've got to tell you this, there's, to my knowledge, there is absolutely no evidence that Bill ever misused any money from Alcoholics Anonymous. Now he did get a little bit of money for the writing of the big book, you know, and that probably provided a stipend, you know.
Sure.
But as far as like raiding the treasury of the fellowship, there's never been any responsible allegation that he ever right. was irresponsible, you know.
So yeah, yeah.
The money debates of that time varied crazily between two extreme poles of opinion. The conservatives said that AA as such should use no money at all, spread the message by word of mouth. There would be no publicity, no literature, no treasurers, no committees, no intergroups, and no trustees. There would be no paid workers, hence no army of bureaucrats, and therefore no possibility of any government. By refusing to collect money, we'd stay completely out of business. Everything would be done spontaneously, each member following his own conscience, cried the conservatives. Lead us not into temptation. Let's keep it just that simple. And there were people who believed that. You know, some of the early meetings, you know, in both sites, really New York and Akron, but especially Akron, were in homes. I mean, I don't think they were paying rent at T. Henry and Clarice's house, you know, where they met for years and years and years. So I can see them wanting to keep it simple.
Sure.
At the other extreme, we had the radicals, the promoters, which was Bill. They said we had to have vast sums. We must employ press agents. We need a great literature. We would have to own chains of hospitals. There would need to be regiments of paid workers of every description, even paid missionaries to carry the message to distant cities and far lands. As we got going, there would have to be vast public rallies. Squads of members riding sound trucks would crisscross the country. As world-famous men and women joined up with us, they would gladly stand on the rooftops to shout the good word. Thus, the AA message, pure and ungarbled, would riz around the world quite as fast as did Jules Verne's hero in just about 80 days. Around the World in 80 Days was a Jules Verne novel.
The movie, yeah.
No fantasy was too impossible, no idea too grandiose for the promoters. And where would they get the money? From the public, of course. The rich would send in millions. Now, you know, looking back on Bill and how you know, how he was pushing to have Alcoholics Anonymous spread. So there was a bunch of religious groups, you know, around the turn of the century, who just started grassroots and grew very, very big and got very, very influential and powerful. The Emanuel movement, the Jacobi Club, there was a number of them. And Bill was paying attention to this. So as Alcoholics Anonymous was growing, I think that was the model he was keeping his eye on as far as how this thing would grow.
Sure.
Today that we can see that conservatives would have rotted us by doing nothing. On the other hand, the promoters would have surely ruined us by trying to do everything. The process of separating the sense from the nonsense was long and painful. We were easily confused because nobody had any monopoly on good sense. That's a great line. In their prudence, the conservatives seemed right when they said that great sums would be dangerous. But when fear got the upper hand and they insisted on no money or services whatever, they seemed to be talking arrant foolishness. Their program could lead only to great confusion and a snail's pace growth. It was much the same with the promoters. In their enthusiasm, they sometimes urged dangerous schemes, yet wisdom was often theirs nonetheless. You know, when you look at Bill and Dr. Bob, Bill really was on the promotion side, and Dr. Bob really was on the conservative side.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a good pair because they met in the middle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Mike?
Yeah. Hopefully they held each other accountable.
I think they did. You know, the thing that doesn't show up in the archives and doesn't show up in a lot of the history is the phone calls. You know, they talked to each other a lot. And even though long distance calls were expensive back then, you know,
they would talk
to each other a lot. And a lot of those conversations are lost to the wind.
Yeah.
But I bet they would be interesting. Slowly, as the hammers of the promoters beat on the stubborn anvils of the conservatives, our two money traditions were fashioned. At first, we made certain concessions to the radicals. We conceded that, though unorganized as a whole, we would nevertheless have to create committees or service boards so that AA could function and carry our message, and at regional and international levels, we would sometimes have to hire a few full-time workers. This was going to cost money, but never a lot of it, never enough to pose any great problem or future temptation. I don't know, $20 million.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
You know,
that's That's a lot of temptation.
You know, 1957, I don't know what their prudent reserve was. So this obvious necessity did, however, pose the question of professionalism. There was a widespread and justified fear in the early days that AA might be saddled with a class of paid 12-step workers, people who would want salaries or fees for carrying the AA message person to person and face to face. It did not take us long to see that such a development would certainly kill the spirit of the whole undertaking. The 12-step simply couldn't be sold for money. Now, Monty, there's a great example of this that I'm sure you're aware of. When you become a counselor at a treatment center, or you know, a paid worker at a recovery center or something like that, when you're getting paid, it's of no spiritual value. So what I mean by that is this: I have seen people who own treatment centers. I've seen so many counselors relapse, and it's because they let up on the Alcoholics Anonymous world, right. So they didn't continue to sponsor, they didn't continue to be consistent with meetings, they didn't have service commitments for fun and for free. They were getting paid, they were with Alcoholics day in, day out. That's enough for me, thank you.
That's right.
And if you're working with alcoholics 8 hours a day, wouldn't that ensure like maybe an extra dose of sobriety? And it doesn't.
It does not. It does not. And you know, every every treatment professional that I have rubbed shoulders with, I have talked to about this, and it is a big problem. So many go back out because though they're working for others, they're not working with others, and they replace their own maintenance of their own spiritual program with their job, and that is not the same thing. You know, driving people to a meeting and sitting in a meeting with your clients, that's not the same thing as applying and implementing the spiritual principles in those steps in your own personal life. Sorry, but it's not.
This great fear of professionalism sideswiped us even when we hired an AA janitor or cook. And it doubly bedeviled us when we finally had to hire a few AA members to work full-time as area or international secretaries. For a while, they carried the awful stigma of professionalism. They were, we said, making money out of AA. Believe it or not, they were personally avoided by many a fearful and righteous member. Even the communities and boards for whom they worked often regarded them as a sort of necessary but heretical evil. In them, we were mixing the material with the spiritual. To keep these borderline professionals in a proper spiritual condition, we mixed in the smallest amount of money we could, meaning that we paid them the least salaries for which they could possibly consent to work. You know, that's not the right way to go either. However, the radicals had partially made their point. AA did have to have some paid workers, if only a few. We finally saw that these people were primarily paid for making good and effective 12-step work possible. Today, they are not regarded as professionals at all, and we try to pay them well. They are among the most dedicated AAs that we know. Hence, Tradition 8 declares, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. But the conservatives also had their victory when we finally took the decision to build a dike against the inrush of contributions from the world outside. We began to decline all such gifts, large and small. Our service centers would never wax rich from the contributions of AA members. But our well-meaning friends, by gift and bequest, could endow us with huge funds. Once we began to accept donations of this kind, there would be no end. Though easily able to pay our own small service bills, we would nevertheless begin to accept huge amounts of charity. Worse still, rich AA service boards would embark on all sorts of needless and compromising adventures. A large paid bureaucracy would certainly take shape, and the worst fears of the conservatives would be realized. Respecting gifts and grants, their wisdom had been surprisingly right. Thus, we developed Tradition 7. The AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. You know, he's going over again and again and again the wisdom of sure. some of these traditions.
I find it interesting that, Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. It's AA as a whole. It's not necessarily the individual AA member. We know it's okay for an individual AA member to be paid for services such as certified alcohol and drug counselor, a licensed drug and alcohol counselor, even life coach. We all have our opinions about that stuff, but it's perfectly permissible for a member of AA to take on those jobs.
You know, personally, the way I think the 12-step work ought never be charged for. So, right. what is 12-step work? Well, when you go back into the history of all of this, you'll see that the 12-step work is sitting knee to knee with somebody and taking them through the 12 steps.
Yes.
So you can get paid for making that possible. There's sober coaches now, there's interventionists. I mean, you name it, there's a whole bunch of specialized people out there who try to help create the atmosphere where someone can maybe hear the message. I think a lot of treatment centers are like that. They're like waiting rooms for the individual to hear what they need to hear so they'll do what they need to do. And providing those spaces certainly serves a purpose. Many of us, our first experience with sobriety and recovery was in treatment centers. You know. So.
Yeah, you bet.
Not long after this tradition was written, AA's trustees turned down a bequest of $10,000 at a moment when money was badly needed. It was a time when, by a considerable margin, the AA groups were failing to support their own world headquarters. Nevertheless, our trustees promptly plugged that first threatened leak in our newly constructed dike against the temptation to take money from outside AA. Therefore, AA would pay for its services or do without them. That decision still stirs me. It was one of the great turning points in our history. So AA's will pay for its services or do without them. Mm-hmm. Monty, have you ever been in a meeting where it kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller? Finally, it couldn't even pay its own rent.
Yes. Yes.
Time to close it up. You know, there'll be people who putting in $20 a week or whatever, you know, trying to keep their meeting going. There's a spiritual experience to be had in the fellowship when you see things like that happen, and you know, maybe it's time to pick up your chair and put it in another room.
Absolutely.
What I mean?
And I think I've seen districts bail out a meeting that needed bailing out. But I've been part of a couple of groups that actually closed. And you know what? It wasn't the worst thing that happened. It just wasn't.
No, AA is not closing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like one meeting, maybe it's not serving the purpose that it once had. I know I started a home group one time and I moved away and some different things happened, right? But it became incredibly small. There was 120 people there in the heyday. In the last year or so of the meeting, there was three or four people there.
Wow.
It had gotten so small that, you know, it really was time to pack up. To conclude, our spiritual way of life is safe for future generations if, as a society, we resist the temptation to receive money from the outside world. But this leaves us with a responsibility, one that every member ought to understand. We cannot skip when the treasurer of our group passes the hat. Our groups, our areas, and AA as a whole will not function unless our services are sufficient and their bills are paid. When we meet and defeat the temptation to take large gifts, we are only being prudent. But when we are generous with the hat, we give a token that we are grateful for our blessings and evidence that we are eager to share what we have found with all those who still suffer. So being generous with the hat, Monty, I know you are, I know I am. It's been many years since I've put a dollar in the basket, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty traditional that I'll put five in these days.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, and that's where money and spirituality mix in the hat.
Sure, sure. I think, you know, it's a spiritual principle. You give and things are taken care of. They just are. I mean, religious bodies all over the world have been lived by the principle of tithing. And not for the purpose of receiving, but in doing it, you're always taken care of.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So in my personal experience, when I was selfish and I wanted everything for me and I was really tight with my money, I didn't have anything.
And
you know, today it's really not like that. I don't see money the same way anymore, and I've got more of it than I need.
Yeah.
So I believe that I'm a steward of God's money.
Yep. Amen.
And the better steward I am, the more availability there is of that money. Yeah. Does that make any sense?
Yes, yes, it does. It absolutely does. It took me a long time to learn that principle. I was taught it for a long time. I believed it, but I did. But I lived in fear, you know, and actually part of my fear inventory was surrounded around that, and that helped me, you know, to be delivered from that bondage of, you know, I've got to make sure everything's okay. No, you do what you're supposed to do, and God will make sure everything's okay. And
isn't that really true? I mean, it's been my experience that the less selfish I am, the more stuff I have.
Yep. It certainly appears to be that way. All right. Well, next week, and this is going to be very cool, we're going to tackle problems other than alcohol. Yeehaw.
I've been looking forward to that for a long time.
Yeah, that's going to be great. That's going to be good. All right. So, if you've got friends, if you've been tuning into this show and you've got friends that perhaps they're in other 12-step fellowships other than AA, perhaps you've got friends that aren't in any, and this would be a good time to invite them to listen with you. I'm stepping out on faith and saying that. I hope that doesn't come back to bite me, but we'll see. Chris, thank you so much. Another great episode, and we will see you next week, my friend.
All right. Sounds great.
All right. Listeners, until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.